Save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182. 82.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, good day. Well, 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 welcome, welcome, one and all, to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am, of course, am not Bob Kincaid. I'm John Fox, filling in for the man. If I manage not to drown in my own phlegm, we'll make it. And if the streamer holds up, it's being a bit weird today, but fingers crossed we'll be all right. I know that they're doing some upgrades up the road, so maybe that's impacting things. But anyway, it's Thursday. It's the last show for the week. I had said Friday was going to be a bit of an up-in-the-air situation, and it's been assessed, and I will not be able to do a show tomorrow. So whatever you got, get out of your system. This is your last chance for the week, and I am told that Bob will be ringing in today. So we can catch up on what's been going on with Netroots Nation and what's been going on with the last mountain and the like, and, you know. But we'll see how we go. First, the business. Email rolls into John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com. You want to get out on the program, dial into 304-574-7811. That's 304-574-7811. It's on your nickel this week. And got some follow-up stuff from a couple of days ago, and a few other things to get into. First, got to make myself mobile here.
Now, you'll remember the other day I played... Whoa! Phones already. Well, no sense in waiting. Welcome to the program. Who we got?
This is Albert.
Hey, Albert! Welcome, welcome. How are you?
Oh, boy, boy, boy. I'm busy, busy, busy.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
how it
yeah.
is. But now I'm free. We on?
Yeah, you're on. You're on, man.
Oh, we're on. Oh, well, let me apologize to the entire Horn family. I mean, I know I don't need to, but I do need to, you know. School, I'll tell you, you know, as everyone knows what's been going on over here in my home state, hey, well, the state I live in of Wisconsin, Governor Walker, oh, what an eventful spring it's been, let me tell you. And I'll tell you, after teaching two kids first grade, teachers don't get paid enough money. They
Absolutely.
Just simply don't.
Absolutely.
And to see, I mean, it's the most, I don't, $50,000, they're crying about $50,000 a year. $50,000 a year isn't going to cover the hair dye. If I was a vain man, which I'm not, but if I was, I couldn't cover the hair dye for $50,000 a year. It's the most excruciatingly difficult thing, and I only have two, so I couldn't imagine 30. It's just mind-boggling to think and how they can sit there and, you know, cause teachers to be some sort of sacrificial lamb because they want to give their corporate cronies $140 million to do what? I don't even understand. They're talking now. They're talking toss sands. And don't even get me started. They're talking toss sands in this country. I mean, in Canada where they do tar sands, it's an environmental holocaust.
Yeah.
You know, just like mountaintop removal, except there's no mountains. It's just flat. But then they rip that up. You waste water. Do all the things they do to it. And to do it to a more populated area, we all know. We all know that when you're drinking vanilla extract and trying to smoke pebbles, that you're just a washed-out, hopeless junkie, and there's no hope for you. And that's where we are when it comes to oil and, you know, our addiction to it, that we're sitting here. I mean, come on. We actually think that soaking rock, I mean, with hot water and soaking out the oil that's trapped in the matrix, that we're doing all right.
Well, it's like those bloody pro fracking ads from Exxon.
Mm.
You know, where it's like, you know, the safe and clean burning natural gas. Okay, you know, I'll give you that the gas itself is a bit better than coal, but it's like completely disregarding the extraction process, except for going, you know, and it just took the idea on how to safely extract this resource, and it's like going safely. You know, there's real noise happening about all this fracking. You know, I mean, in New York State, there's a lot of noise. Things are actually being slowed up a bit. And here in Australia, we've had a couple of minor little accidents in early projects, and people are noticing.
Well, brother, how old are you, John?
42.
42. All right. So I'm 33. And so in our lifetime, before I was born, you were around looking around. Have you ever, in that period of time before 1977, did you ever hear about anyone ever turning their faucet on and lighting their water on fire?
Hell no,
because,
man.
I don't remember that, and I don't remember it up until recently ever seeing that. I mean, your water's lighting on fire. It blows up in your face.
Well, and
I don't even understand.
And how these companies, I mean, you know, you've obviously seen Gasland, you know, and where they say, well, you know, well, prove it's us. Well, it's like, you know, okay, family's been living here for like five generations. This only started, you know, the fur only started falling off all the animals after you all came. All the children in the area only started getting sick after you all came. And the fact that that particular process has been completely, you know, loopholed through the Clean Water Act and all of that is got to be one of those proof positive things on how the system is so incredibly rigged, because they know that it's a dangerous thing. So they're saying, well, but we're not going to let the most important regulations apply to this, because if they did, we'd never be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just be a no-brainer.
You know, oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, I remember, just like we were saying, you know, I mean, we can even condense it, just that, you know, I remember the days when water used to fight fire, not cause it.
You're making me think of Fahrenheit 451 when the one kid says, Mommy, I heard that once, you know, Christy says, you know, I heard once that firemen used to put out fires, you know. There's the fireman going, oh, ha, 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 hearty, har, 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 you're so silly.
You're crazy. What kind of crazy talk is this? I mean, and that's, you know, and we know we can't go there. But there's good news, too. There really is good news. I mean, did you hear? I don't know if you heard. Maybe you didn't, but hopefully you did. Solar power. Solar power is now on par.
Oh, yeah.
With petroleum in terms of.
Oh, yeah.
So we've done it. Remember? That was never going to come. It was never going to come.
But what? That is if you remove the subsidies to the fossil fuel industry. So we still have a false numbers game going on.
Yeah, true. And you know how they play. You know, we all know how they play these games. But, you know, when we're sitting here looking at it, if it's, you know, I mean, yeah, remove the subsidies, the cost isn't going to go down. The cost isn't going to go down. You know, it's like that first hit is free. The second one, we'll cut you a deal. But by the time you're toothless and, you know, searching for them rocks, you know, that's a $10 rock right there, buddy. And that's what it's going to be. I mean, you know, when we're pulling oil out of sand, you know, not pulling it like a pipe, you know, washing it out of sand and doing the main, and then gasifying coal and natural fracking or, I mean, destroy. I mean, you know, you sit there, you think, you know, they're fracking for natural gas in your neighborhood. You know, you have an aquifer. That's where your water comes from. And then when they put, and then, I mean, besides the fact that the freaking water lights on fire, it's the crap that doesn't land on fire that's going to kill you probably just as fast.
Well,
you know, all the chromium and arsenic and da 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 da.
Well, and on, you know, on top of all that, I had about three ideas in my head and they all just vanished all at once.
Come back.
It's just after 8 o'clock in the morning here, man. So you got to give me a little slack.
Yes, sir.
Actually, when you first came on, you're talking about, you know, teachers and what's been going on in Wisconsin, and this is one of these things that really, really, I've never been able to add up since I first started paying attention at all to these kind of discussions back in the 70s, right? Back in the 70s, we were hearing that the teachers' union was too strong and, you know, and we can never get rid of bad teachers and this and that and the other thing. But the one thing that has always been a constant has been that teachers are always under-resourced and teachers are never paid. And why is it if we're falling behind everybody in almost every metric that you can name when it comes to education, why is this not the first thing that you're throwing money at? I don't understand where something like teaching your children is a budgetary issue, like there's a profit and loss margin on it now. And why good teachers are like some of the most incredible people in the world. And, you know, we all can, all through our school careers, we can define, you know, the good ones and the not so good ones. And I bet a lot of those not so good ones, if they were better resourced, better appreciated, and better paid, they'd fall really quickly into the great column.
But the other problem you got to remember too, I mean, this is something that we see across the spectrum in all kinds of different jobs. I mean, you see it in everything. I mean, you know, in a way, you know, the answer to your question, why do teachers, that's because the rich are taxed too high. That's how I was going to say it, because that's always their answer to everything, remember? It's always, you know, it always goes back to taxes and regulations. It's too high. And it's something completely unrelated, true. But at the same time, you know, when you sit there and you look, we have teachers, right? Now, what do you hear? There's a shortage for teachers. Nursing. Prime example. There's a shortage of nurses. I remember when I was growing up, because my mom, you know, that's what she did when I was a kid. You know, like the, you know, she was on welfare when I was a kid. I was a single mother with two sons. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You got to do what you got to do. And she put herself through school, right? So she put herself through school. And what'd she do? Well, my mom always kind of wanted to be. She's that kind of person anyway, nurturing, caring kind of person. Nursing was a good fit for her anyway. And it just so happened to be that they were in need for it, in demand. But what happens? It's the same thing with computer programmers or any kind of Wall Street anything, right? It's the same thing. You know, teachers also, people go in the job because it pays money. And they don't really do it because they're fitted or suited to do it. They do it because it's going to make money. So when you got a doctor probing around in a region of yours, and he's really not thinking about what he's doing. He's thinking about his RS3 Porsche and, you know, going on his little vacation with all the money he's making from being so specialized. Or, you know, the Wall Street guy that's not really worried about what his guy's making anyway, because, you know, he doesn't care. He gets paid, you know, left and right. He doesn't matter, you know, wins or losses. He's still getting his money. You know, when we sit here and we look at this system where we have to sit here and answer to, oh, teachers are getting too much in terms of money. Teachers are getting too much money. Teachers, you know, if it wasn't for teachers, what the hell, where would we be right now? Wouldn't we still be, we wouldn't even have a freaking wheel. We wouldn't have fire. We wouldn't have anything. Teachers are the fundamental base rock of our civilization. And, you know, just like everything else, anything else that's too, you know, that's just too much. It's like omnipresent, too ubiquitous, like water and clean air and, you know, everything else. Ah, we just take it for granted. Ah.
Well, I mean, yeah,
we're little humans.
If you have a successful education system, there are, you know, all these run-on benefits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the kids engaged and in school, they're not going to be out, you know, causing trouble.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're a rich person and worried about, you know, having to pay too much for this service or that service, best thing you can do is, like, educate people so that they become productive.
But see, now that's planning for a future, John.
Oh, I know. It's all too rational.
Somebody with hope. No, yeah, true, and that's with hope. And we all know, it's scientifically proven, that these people that classify them as Republicans, they have a larger fear center in their brain.
Yep.
You see, when they get elected to office and they give corporations $140 million, the very next thing they do is they cancel and cut off the high-speed rail line. Now, what you're saying, I think, you know, to me, it fits along the same lines as building infrastructure. If you don't improve and build and expand your infrastructure, and you're still running steam locomotives and everyone else is running maglevs, who, where are you going to be? Where are you going to finish this race? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you don't build the students and you don't teach them and how to do this and how to do this and appreciate learning, just appreciate learning. No, they don't do that. They study to the test. That's what they do. They just get the answers to the test.
Yeah.
Well, what the hell is that? That's not learning.
Well, I mean, you know? This desire to want to be able to, and it's impossible to, quantify down to a number someone's education, you know, and the idea that you can give anybody any kind of a standardized test and come away knowing actually how intelligent they are really is foolish. It's a foolish game because, you know, you might, you know, I'll take the guy who can figure something out on the fly because he's got a logical brain and can look at things, who might not have all the facts right in his head all the time, might have to look a few things up, but he's got the brain power and the mechanics to actually work through something logically than the person who can rattle every little statistic off to me. But when I go and say, go sort that out that's not working, and they're like,
yeah,
well, how do I do that? Well, you know, and I mean, it's a funny thing, you know, like they're in my own industry, very often the self-educated guys, whether they went through a formal education or not, but those that seem to be self-educators are the ones that can actually solve problems and come up with creative solutions to things. Than someone that studied to sit there going, if I get this point score, as long as I play the game right, then I'll get the right scores to get into the right uni to get the right piece of paper.
Oh, John, you're a billion percent correct. You look at a man, right? And we got to talk about him. And I got to talk about him because this is the epitome of what you just said. Nikolai Tesla.
Ah, yeah.
Without Nikolai Tesla, we wouldn't be in the century we're in today. The dude invented binary code in 1896. Think about that for a second. And the guy invented binary code in 1896. What was binary code in 1896? What the hell was binary code in 1940?
Before he even wow, on off circuit,
yeah.
a way of actually storing data. It's for us now. It's like, oh, that's so simple.
obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Oh, you know, you see what I'm saying? So, and what is he? What school did he go to in the Czech Republic?
None, as far as I know of.
Yeah, nothing that would be anything of, you know, any kind of significance today. But one thing they might have done is they probably fostered his desire to learn.
His curiosity.
You know, as this Wienergate has shown us, right? This Wienergate, right. So the guy flirted a little bit. He's a human. He's a man. He's got gonads, right? And it's really easy for a male being to slip into that second chakra, right, of the gonads,
yeah,
and to go right into that sexual drive. It's so easy for us, especially when we get a little bit of power.
Yeah.
And then girls are calling us hot. You know, that's easy for us to do. But that same kind of intensity can be applied to any and all of them. You can have that same intensity of a sex drive to a love drive or to being inquisitive. And that's
absolutely
the thing that teachers have to turn on to us. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, my school career was pretty complicated and jaded for a whole lot of, like, ridiculous reasons. And I look back on most of my school career as being more about corralling kids for 8 hours a day than actual education. But then in that experience, there are certain people that you come across that you could tell that they actually, whatever their subject was, and I had a literature teacher like this. I had a couple of music teachers, of course. Music teachers teach music because they love music. And I've had a couple of history teachers that you can tell that they have a real desire to impart the knowledge that they have to others. That is actually what drives them. And when they're driven that way, they make it engaging and they make it exciting. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, I had one real standout English teacher in my whole high school, public high school career. You know, everybody else, you know, would be like, okay, you got to read these chapters by this time and take a test. Well, I had another one and, you know, we're doing American literature and if we were doing plays, well, we actually acted them out, played them out, worked them out, worked them through, and, you know, and finding modern context to Hemingway and things like that, and totally engaged. And what's funny is I would master those classes, but you send me into the class with the person that says, okay, read these 4 chapters for tomorrow and take the test. Those would be the classes I'd flunk. Because I'm the type of person, you gotta engage me. You gotta engage me.
That's
even now. And it's not anything about short attention span. It's don't waste my time.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you sit there and you think, right? Genius. Right?
Yeah.
John, are you a genius? John, are you a genius?
No.
No, bullshit. You are. You are. You are a genius. You have it in you. If you have that curiosity, that's what genius is. That's what that is. And we get told, oh, you know, you can't possibly be a genius. You can't possibly remember this. You can't possibly do this. And that's nonsense because you cap yourself. And that's why I asked you. I needed you to say that.
I had
a feeling.
Okay.
We're trained to do that. That's what school teaches us. But we're geniuses, all of us. you know, without any kind of, you know, structural defects in the central processing unit there, you know, in the brain compartment, you know, you're a genius. You've got it all. You're a genius into what you love to do. You love your music. You're a genius. You compare it to me, I can't do the music, but I can start talking about Tesla, and I can do that, and I have my gifts and my genius. And we just have to have enough confidence within ourselves to think, heck, I can do that. I'll never forget, you talked Hemingway. It was a literary teacher that really opened my eyes to art itself. To sit there and say, when they put green on a screen, like in this movie, this is what it represents. And the water, you see the clarity of it. Nothing in this picture, this moving picture, is there by accident. It's all there for a reason.
Yeah.
And so I said that, and when that it opened my eyes, I didn't realize it's a whole new world. And that's what, you know, that's what it's got to do. It's got to light that fire. It's got to make you sit there and go, wow, I can see that. And if you can see it, right, knowing there's a trap is the first step in evading it, and if you can see that it's there, you know, so careful if you guys start getting famous and some woman comes up to you and says, oh, that's hot.
Oh,
there's probably a tripod on that other side, and they're going to get you right as low as they can.
There's no doubt about that. And you know, we are dealing with the double standard of Democrats versus Republicans, because, you know, I mean, like, here's the first sex scandal we've had where, like, there actually was no sex, right?
No sex.
And this guy's having to leave when, you know, we've had, you know, I mean, like, you know, Vitter. Well, I mean, you can just go down the list, you know.
We don't have time. We don't have time.
That actually had illegal activity. Here, this guy was just being a bit of, you know, an internet, you know, creep, if you think it's creepy. You know, there's a lot of people that do this shit every day.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, it's purely an appearances thing. And I hear some people come up going, oh, you know, it's a right wing slime campaign and all that, and you know what? Yeah, probably part of it is, but I mean, that is the time that we live in, and if Anthony Weiner can't have enough of his head on straight to understand the risk that he was taking when he was getting into that activity because of the stature that he has. Really, really, really boneheaded move, dude. Because if he had just played this, you know, yeah, I got up to some silly messaging, and if he had just gone, like, to ground for a while, he probably could have worn this. And I think he can come back. Like, Oberman did a piece the other day talking about how basically, yeah, step down now, come back later once everybody's kind of forgotten about this. Because, you know, I mean, Bill Clinton had the whole flowers thing that they tried to do to him.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
of them.
And
yeah.
So, I mean, you know, he came back from, you know, a similar situation, very different, but, you know, same kind of world of attack. And the guy ended up being one of the most successful presidents that we've had in recent history. So, you know, I mean, because I do think Anthony Weiner's a really good guy, and I do think that he's a bloody fucking good attack dog. And him and Grayson, two guys that I've always had time for. But you know what, Anthony, mate, you know, this is how we learn about your high-powered wife.
Yeah, I never heard about it until
No, very, true. Very quietly in the background is supposedly, you know, Hillary Clinton's secret weapon, you know, the stuff that I've read about it. She sounds amazing. And then the other part of me says, what are you doing that when you've got a woman like that? Just personally looking from the outside, dude. But that could be part of that thing of coming from having that little bit of power where people lose a little bit of their perspective or something. I don't know. It's just dumb. Just dumb.
Yeah, you get a little drink, you get a little drinky poo in you. And next thing you know, you're in a shit of cane. And, I mean, it's just, yeah, that's what happens. I mean, but real quick, I mean, I'll tell you where I'm at with the Weiner thing. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to tell myself. This is my medicine. I'm going to say that one party apparently holds itself to a higher standard than the other.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to take it there, and Weiner doesn't have to come back. Because you know what? I hope that whatever sparks he put out there, his genius, because, you know, he had his strengths, right? His strengths was going after and, you know, making logical, rational arguments regarding the Republicans and their disgusting attacks on Medicare.
Absolutely.
And taxes and war and all this other. I mean, you know, that's what I mean. I hope he inspires someone else to get that fire going. I mean, we need a wildfire. We need a complete and utter, that's what nature, I sit there and I look, that's what it's telling me. Look at these giant fire, trees are exploding. That's what we need. We need human minds to be doing that. We need a wildfire in the mind, and we can't just keep having little campfires and put our little liberal stones around it and say, oh, isn't he? No. I'm going to go off and I'm going to say, Anthony, thank you for what you've done. Have enjoyed the rest of your life. I hope you don't embarrass yourself or anyone you love like that again. Take care. Hope you get some. Do some writing. Do something. I don't know. Do something. You know, it's nice that you'll stay active, but let's see who else gets in there. You know, I mean, we have to change the paradigm. You know, and it's nice that, you know, it was actually aggravating. It's aggravating to give the Republicans a victory, anything that they can congratulate themselves about. But that's why I'm saying to myself, we hold ourselves to a higher standard. How's
but,
that taste?
But you know, like, is it really a victory? I mean, yeah. It's a point score. You know, I mean, I don't know if you caught any of the show yesterday, but I was reading from a piece in the New York Times that was actually talking about reason and how maybe our whole assumption of reason and reason debate has been off from the beginning, and that it's not actually reason debate, but it's actually the instead of going basing it on reason theory, kind of how we interact and you know, the idea of the marketplace of ideas, is that it's actually an extension. We're not actually trying to get to the truth. We're still just trying to win. And that it might be shifting to be argumentative theory. And this to me is just another one of these things. We have point scoring blueies on the side over nonsense, but we never actually have any dialogue about the elephants in the room, the various ones we have.
That's creeping up on us.
Yeah. Hold on one second, Albert. I got someone ringing the other line. I got to check it just in case if it's Bob. So just hang tight, mate.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the program. Who we got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan. How you going? I got Albert on the other line. Just hang tight. I will come
sure.
Right back to you. Hey, managed to do that back and forth and not lose anyone. Imagine that.
Awesome.
So I got Susan on hold, but that's cool. I just want to make sure I wasn't going to miss I wasn't going to miss Bob. But where were we? The multitasking of self-engineering. You can lose it just sitting there going, oh, now I have to do this mechanical thing. Wiener, yeah, I think it can come back. Did I lose you, man? Oh, he went. Whoops. And we lost Susan. What happened there? Doe? Let's try that again. Welcome to the program. Who we got?
It's Susan again.
Yes.
I dropped.
Yeah, sorry about that. I seem to have lost both of you. But anyway, welcome to the program, Susan.
Well, I'm afraid I have to disagree slightly with Albert.
Okay.
First of all, in one way, I do agree with him. The Republicans have won something. What they've won is another McCarthy era. Because the Democrats gave it to them. Instead of standing up to these creeps like they should have and saying, you know, producing example after example, most of which were pedophiles and or serial killers, they caved in like the spineless wimps they are. Now, here's a message to the nice little station that is kind enough to broadcast this over terrestrial radio. Please get your dump button ready. I have a message for the Democratic leadership for the witch hunt that you have been conducting. I got a real problem with witch hunts. I'm with them. I have a real problem with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Here's my message.
Yeah.
Fuck you and the horse you rode in on.
Well, I mean... This...
Sorry about that.
No. It's all right, Susan. You know... The whole thing's so frustrating because, I mean, there's some honest issues where you can have some real problems with the guy and his conduct. But the fact...
Yes, I do.
But the fact that this stuff seems to impact our political system more than the very issues that we have to deal with is incredibly frustrating and depressing. And, again, I think it's kind of... That piece on reason and argumentative theory from yesterday... I really want to go and do some more follow-up reading on that. It's really just kind of making me look at it differently. It doesn't help me any.
Yeah.
It's not helping me come up with any answers or anything. But it's giving me an insight to why I see what I see.
Yeah, my thing, you know, like Albert was talking about everybody has their own, you know, like yours is music. Mine's history. Okay. I put things in the context of the broad swath of history. I like history. I've been in love with history from way back. Anyway. Okay. First of all, you've got this. Yeah, Anthony Weiner stepped in it. He stepped in it big time. And I agree with Albert. He should have just said, yeah, so what? I blew it. That's between my constituents, my wife.
Yeah.
And my conscience. And if you don't like it, tough. If you got pictures published, it'd be damned to you. But he didn't. He lied. He shouldn't have. He stepped in it. Okay. My big problem. Is with the Democrats, who not only stood back and didn't support this man, but also actively engaged in what, to me, was an act of witch hunt. They did everything they could to undercut him. And that includes Barack Obama.
Yeah, I agree with you, you know, I mean... But there's this natural, anytime someone gets caught out, the first thing that they're going to do is try and just fucking cover their ass, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, it is a natural reaction.
Here's two historical examples. First one, recent history. What would this country be like if a certain president had gotten booted out of office by his own party?
This is why I think I liked where Keith Olbermann was coming from. Actually, was you know.
Yeah, I read that article too.
Quietly,
what if the Democrats want to do if he runs for election and gets sent back to Congress? What are they going to say?
Well, it'll all be over. In other words, he will have gone away. The constituency will have had some time to think about it, say, you know what? You're an idiot, but we forgive you. We'd like you back in the job. And I think that will end up kind of clearing the thing for him. Just you know, as time helped for Bill Clinton, they tried to do it again. See, here's where, you know, they're always going to try and slime good Democrats and any Democratic president. I mean, we just know this, just having watched what they did to Carter.
Yeah,
you know, it's that whole delegitimizing game that they, because they just don't feel like anyone else has the right to be in power. So, I mean, you have to expect for them to jump on anything like this. In this particular case, I got to put the weight completely with Anthony Weiner. This guy should have known better. This guy should have, you know, I mean, being a tech savvy guy, and like you said, if he had come clean and said, yeah, I did it, I'm an idiot, let's get past it, we probably wouldn't be where we are now. But then
there's also an additional element.
Yeah.
Here's my second historical reference. Peace in our time. British Prime Minister.
It's so early in the morning. Please. Tip of my tongue, somewhere in my brain. Big cigar, big guy.
Well, I just went blind too.
Churchill.
No, Churchill was the one that fought him.
Ooh, I'm feeling really stupid here.
So am I. I just went blank, totally blank.
It's all right. It's all right. But, you know, I mean...
it was whistling. But the thing is, my problem isn't so much with the Democrats because with the Republicans because...
Chamberlain.
Like I said before. Yeah, Chamberlain. My problem isn't with the Republicans so much because, like I said before, you expect a snake to act like a snake.
Absolutely.
What I did not expect was outright appeasement on the part of the Democrats, and that's what has me so angry.
I think Barney Frank handled it about it as well as you could, because of course, you know, many, many years ago he had, I don't even remember the details, but he had a little bit of an indiscretion, and he's someone who, you know, came clean and, you know, and now he's, you know, this openly gay, you know, representative that everybody seems to, you know, not be afraid of. But when he was asked about the Wiener thing, he says, oh, I understand why you all are coming to me because I had an indiscretion, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, he just kind of said, like, you know, I'm not going to comment on it. I had my issue back then. I dealt with it. Anthony needs to deal with it, but that's all you're going to get out of me. Like, you know, it was just this thing of like, yeah, I know why you're coming to me because you can kind of come up with a parallel 20 years ago and I'm still standing. If you're asking me whether he should resign or not, has nothing to do with me. Stop asking.
Yeah. But, you know, it just, and my representative, it wasn't too long ago, they were talking about committing him to the funny farm. And you would think somebody who weathered a deal like that could at the very least stand up for a fellow Democrat who was in trouble. No, he caved.
Yeah.
Right along with the rest of them. And as far as I'm concerned, fine.
And in all this,
I don't need this. Can't either.
Well, one of the worst parts about this is that Breitbart has been legitimized to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
This, and that's scary. That's scary.
Well, what I want to know is what I want is I want somebody, and I know they're out there. There are hackers out there. I don't have the skills, but I'm sincerely praying that somewhere out in the ether, some other country, perhaps, is sneaking in through the little ethers and in the intertubes, finding out all the little dirt on dear old Breitbart.
Well, you know,
and Wally.
I'm being taken to task in the chat room over saying that he's been given legitimacy. Not saying that I agree with that legitimacy, but just the very fact that he got this stuff. Wiener did not handle it well, and it's blown up in his face.
Well, what I want to know is why he wasn't busted for extortion.
Well, I really like to know. You know, I mean, you go back to the that whole video fiasco with the hooker that wasn't a hooker, and all that funny editing with that with that one guy. You know, that was never looked at nearly the way that it should have been. So, yeah,
but from the recordings, that the videotape that Breitbart did, that they made of him talking about the pictures that were taken of Representative Weiner.
Yeah.
Well, he came right out and confessed to extortion.
Did he? What he said? He said money,
yeah.
Money, or I'll show him. Where?
No, he said, "You do what I want, or I'll show them," and that's extortion.
Fine line when you're talking about this kind of stuff in politics, but yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that because, you know.
They're just demanding money. It's blackmail. But if they're demanding something else, it's extortion.
It's true. I mean, Anthony Weiner has most definitely been strong-armed out of his job. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, by a bunch of spineless Democrats.
Why does this happen, though? Why does this happen? Why is it that we can't seem to stand behind someone who honestly screws up, and yet the Republicans will always stand behind someone that, like, royally does horrible stuff? I mean, like, the Senator Ensign.
Commits felonies.
Ensign. Holy creepy. I mean, that whole thing is really freaked out. And, you know,
not to mention Bitter, he was ordering hookers up off the Senate floor.
Well, you know what? I actually find booking a hooker from the Senate less creepy than the whole screwing my staff member and putting both them and the husband and the kid and on my staff and all the hush money.
You're fired.
You know, I mean, really weird. You know, I mean, that is creepy stuff. You know, that is far higher up the creepy scale than what Anthony Weiner did.
Well, except Anthony Weiner had this passion for diapers. It's gross. But, you know, it's just, the whole Republican Party is just riddled with this, and yet they circle the wagons even when laws are broken. There was no law broken.
It's okay, but if you're a Republican.
Yeah. You can get away with everything. You watch. There will be the equivalent of a McCarthy era down the pike, because the Democrats have just shown how easily they cave.
Well, it's like King is heading us down that road with these bloody Muslim spook trials.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some of the stuff that I saw clips of from the hearings that were yesterday or the day before, that was some creepy stuff. You know, was sitting there talking about, you know, extremists, you know, infiltrating the prisons and all this, and you know, none of it's true.
No.
Absolutely none of it's true.
And I would be willing to bet money that neither King or any of his cronies, if you sat them down and hooked them up to a lie detector, would be able to define Sharia law.
Oh, yeah, that was the other one going. There have been instances, and they mention, like, one, and it's dodgy, of where, you know, Muslims have tried to introduce Sharia law into court cases. And it's just ridiculous. It's completely insane.
No. Yeah. Yeah. The guys who are coming up with the closest thing to Sharia law are people like, the Westboro Baptist Church, and some of their tenets, you know, some of the more extreme fundamentalist churches, they're, frankly, downright Taliban-like.
Well, some of the states with their governors are getting a bit like that, you know, very quietly. They're making it, you know, virtually impossible for women to get abortions in some states, you know, starting to introduce, you know, can't ask for a waiting period on a gun, but
I have I have a message, another message for people.
Yeah.
I'm an old broad. Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, hilarious.
I remember when abortions were illegal.
And women died.
Oh, yeah, by the thousands.
Yeah.
Because you see, never mind the fact that the abortions were illegal, they still happened.
Yeah, and that's the reason.
They were just a lot more.
That's the whole basis for the reason why it was legalized.
Yeah. Now, here's the message. People, sooner or later, they're going to get around to doing their thing. If you know someone who has a daughter, or you have daughters or granddaughters, get yourself an herbal, or contact someone who knows about herbs and start planting them.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really, this is another one of those really insidious things that has been going on the last couple of years. Rachel's done some really great stuff on this.
I loved her coverage on it.
Yeah, and I've read commentary going, what's she doing reporting on that? She doesn't have a horse in that race. That's not the point. We're talking about equal protection under the law and the well-being of fellow citizens. And how...
Yeah, actually, she does have a horse in that race. She's female.
Yeah. But it's the stupidity of the people that try and demean, you know, what is honest, good coverage of something that's not getting the coverage that it needs, which, you know, is the choking off of women's health services for those that can least afford it, and even for those who can't afford it, you know. So, go ahead.
I just wonder what these people who are voting for, you know, to shut down Planned Parenthood clinics and stuff, I wonder what they're going to say when their daughters, granddaughters, nieces, whatever, can no longer go and get their pap smears, mammograms, and suddenly they turn up with stage 4 cancer. Are they going to change their mind then? Not hardly.
And if you're if it's all about the money to you, then that stage 4 cancer is a lot more expensive than, you know, the pap smear was. And
that stage 4 cancer is terminal.
Well, but you know, there's still going to be a lot more cost involved. Yeah, aside from being terminal, but I mean, you know, we're talking I think the life part of it they don't really care about. It comes down to, you know, where it adds up in dollars and cents. And, you know, just an example from my own life and experience, when Gail went into chemo treatment a few years ago, the law had only recently changed to where she qualified for the big subsidy on this expensive treatment. And, you know, I said to the doctor, I said, oh, good, you know, thankfully those guidelines have been changed. And he said, if I had met Gail, even if the guidelines hadn't been changed, I would have gotten her into treatment. And I go, why? He said, well, whether anyone wants to talk about it or not, by clearing up this virus with her now is going to save the system a whole lot of money than her being really, really sick in 25 years.
Yeah.
And he said,
my brother had hepatitis C.
You know, so he said, if they come asking me, I'm going to say, okay, you do the math, then come back and talk to me.
Yeah. It's penny wise, pound foolish, and stupid as a box of rocks.
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
I'll leave you on that note.
All righty, dear. Thank you so much for everything you do, and it's always wonderful to talk to you.
Give my love to everybody, and hopefully we will be hearing from Bob. I put up a nice graphic for him, a tin can telephone.
Well, I've been poking at him from various different directions. He did say he was going to ring in tonight, so we'll see. Because I'd like to know what the hell he's been up to. We haven't heard him in over a week, so fingers crossed. I'll poke him during this top of the hour break again and see if we can raise him. All right, Susan.
I'll give Agnes a poke, too.
All right. You take care of yourself.
Good night.
All right, night. And that was, of course, our good friend Susan, who blogs for this very show. And so let's take a little bit of a break here. We might need... yeah, that'll be about enough. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, come back. Phone line's open. Get in on things, 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Crosby, Stills, and Nash & Young.
24 years ago, we're coming to this life, the son of a woman and a man who lived in strife. Was tired of being poor, and he wasn't into selling door to door, and he worked like the devil to be more. A different kind of poverty now upsets my soul. Night after sleepless night, I walk the floor and I want to know, why am I so alone? Where is my woman? Can I bring her home? Have I driven her away? Is she gone? Sunrise, and I'm driven to my bed. I see that it is empty, and this devil's in my head. I embrace the many-colored beast. I grow weary of the torment. Can there be no peace? And I find myself just wishing that my life would simply cease.
Oh,
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, here we are back with Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, your fill-in host for this last and final night this week. Sorry we're not going to have a front porch tomorrow, but I got things to do. But we got 2 hours left in the program, so got plenty of time to get whatever it is on your chest, off your chest. But we're going to go back straight to the phones, and Albert's rung back in. Hey, Albert, how you going, buddy?
Hey, brother, how you doing?
All right,
man. Yeah, all right, so where were we? Okay, we were talking about points, and we were talking about scoring points and so on and so forth. Got disconnected. Sue comes in, and she starts talking about a new McCarthy era. And you know what? I hear what she's saying. I see where she's going, and I agree. It very well may happen.
I do.
But I have one thing to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. May I? In this day and age, the day and age we live in, where computer power keeps doubling every, now it's getting to like 4 months, nothing lasts that long. You remember Anton Dodson? Remember him?
Who?
Didn't that feel like a decade ago? Remember that?
Who?
Remember that? Hide your wife, hide your kids, and hide your husband.
Yeah, oh,
they're
yeah.
Raping everybody up.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
How long ago was that? That was only like 8 months ago. Nothing lasts that long. So they can do it. Please do. And they did it, and Lottie comes into the chat, boom, boom, boom. John Boehner over here with two. This guy's banging a couple broads on the side, right?
Yeah, I couldn't see that link.
Like
it was blocked here.
Oh, yeah. It was like a lightning bolt. All right, Wiener resigns, boom, there you go. It's like, I mean, we expect that from them, to be honest, you know. And then this is now real sexual contact. So, you know, they can do their McCarthy if they want, but it ain't going to last very long. They're going to short out every time they do. They've already pushed that button, and they pushed it in the 60s and the 50s. And that technology, it's just not cutting it anymore. In today's day and age, a 13-year-old kid can completely take over your multinational corporation and take all the information and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's just not there anymore. People have access to too much information. That's another thing about the internet. I just got to say this real quick in terms of teaching my kids this past year, which we're going to do again next year here coming up. But if I didn't have the internet, I'd be lost. I'd be like, where would I get this information? They come to me, Dad, where's this caterpillar? I go into a website, I flick, flick, flick a couple buttons. Next thing you know, it tells me what the freaking caterpillar is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, nowadays you can identify instantaneously just about. Now you can do it with a phone. You can have a reader. Blind people can read with a phone, with their phone. Nothing bigger than a phone. I mean, they can do whatever they want, but they're not going to win. Well, they're not going to win. They're just simply not.
Well, but on that whole McCarthy idea, where I think that that is rearing its ugly head much more scarily is in these King hearings. You know, and along with that, this idiot Kane, you know, the former Godfather's Pizza dude, you know, going, you know, I wouldn't have Muslims in my cabinet, you know, and
Sharia law.
Yeah. And there seems to be enough people that get their panties in a twist when you start mentioning, you know, you're going, someone tried to use Sharia law in American court. When was that? I don't know. I just heard that it happened once or twice or five times. And
let me see.
And it doesn't exist.
But they do.
No, they do.
No, John, they do. They try. Remember the Ten Commandments? It's the same freaking thing.
Well, yeah.
Sharia law and old, it's about the same deal as a guy, right? Halal and kosher.
But I'll tell you what. You want to know what I think they actually fear about Sharia law? Is the fact that it's because of the usury rules in there. You are not allowed to make money with credit under Sharia law. That kind of blows the whole banking thing. Hey, Albert, I think I have a Bob Kincaid. I'm going to have to drop you. If you can.
Most certainly.
All right, man.
Tell him and give him my notes, tell him hello, and I love him, and I miss him, and I'll talk to him soon.
Thanks, brother. We'll talk to you soon. How you going? Welcome to the program. We got a Bob?
You got a Bob.
Ah, I thought I did. By the way, Albert says hello.
Oh, hey, Albert.
Yeah, I just dumped him to get on to you, but I've had him on twice today. He's been so busy teaching, doing his homeschooling that he's finally, like, kind of dug himself out from that, and he's rejoined the chat room again. How are you, man?
I was kind of exhausted, but, you know, it's been a 1,000-mile drive that was really exciting, and this event is about a million times better than the one in Vegas. And there's a huge buzz about The Last Mountain, which is going to be shown to the attendees here tomorrow. So we've been working that real hard.
Right on. So you haven't been getting hit up for $300 for power for a day for four outlets?
No, we took a powder on all of that. if there's an opportunity to broadcast, it'll probably be tomorrow or Saturday, and that's all just set up and done.
Right. 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 So, do you have some panel discussions going on with the film down there?
Yeah, there's a panel after the film tomorrow afternoon, and I'll be participating in that. And I'm really looking forward to it. I attended a really excellent panel this afternoon about environmental justice in the Latino community, and it was just really, really cool.
Right on.
And just got done doing an interview with Mark Thompson on Sirius.
Excellent.
So we're getting the word out there.
That's fantastic. I've been meaning to ask: is the film actually going to be? Is it getting like a national cinema release, or is this going to be purely having to go find your local art house, local small house place?
If you go to thelastmountainmovie.com, there is a list of cities and movie theaters there. I've been told that the listing for San Diego is wrong. But apart from that, everything, it's being released city by city. It's playing, I guess, in what one might consider an art house. In Atlanta, it's going to play at the Terra Theater, which is an awesome space, a great movie theater. It's played at the Belcourt in Nashville, which is where all the really cool movies go. And so it's opening city by city by city over the course of the summer. And the whole schedule is there at thelastmountainmovie.com.
All right. Now before you headed to Minneapolis, you were in D.C. What was going on down there?
Well, in conjunction with the reenactment of the March on Blair Mountain, Bo Webb, Alan Johnson, Mickey McCoy, and a number of others, and I, Debbie Gerald, Brennan Haltom from Cold River Mountain Watch, went to D.C. to sort of focus attention on the fact that mountaintop removal is a killing event. And so we held a press conference, and in fact, I think it's up on YouTube. We held a press conference, and then we went in and had a fairly lengthy, detailed meeting with the Environmental Protection Agency and thanked them for the work that they've done thus far, but also begged them to do more.
Yeah.
And so,
how much face time did you get with the EPA?
Oh, we were in there for every bit of an hour, maybe more.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
You know, we just because the coal industry's launched this ongoing, filthy, sleazy, dirty, rotten, hateful, multi-million-dollar campaign against the EPA, and you've got people like Senators Rockefeller and Manchin and McConnell and Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, who are just dog-cussing the EPA. So we wanted to take a little starch out of that and tell them, you know, listen, we've got the courage to stand up to these people in our faces every day, and we've got your back. And you just need to stand firm and do more. Because ultimately, what has to happen, this is an abolitionist movement. It has to be abolished wholesale. Because wherever it happens, it kills people. It's killing people in Alaska. It's killing people in Arizona. It's killing people in Illinois. It's killing people in Appalachia. It's killing people in Bangladesh and Inner Mongolia. It's got to stop.
Did you happen to catch the little bit of our friend Michelle Bachmann in that so-called debate on Monday night where she referred to the EPA as saying that it needed to be renamed? Did you catch this?
Oh, no. What does Michelle want to rename it?
It needs to be renamed.
Environmental Nazi Association?
No. The Job Killing Association.
God, that woman is dumber than a whole big old bucket of homemade stupid.
And I've only watched a few snippets, but it was the most non-debate debate I think I've ever seen. You had...
Well, do you remember the term we coined for these things? We don't call them debates anymore.
It's a pageant.
They're pageants.
Yeah. But this was even better, Bob, though. This was even better because, you know, okay, they had seven of them, and they're all up there basically debating Barack Obama, who's not in the room.
Right.
You know, and...
So there were seven of them? Was that grumpy, sleazy, dopey, stupid... ignorant, hateful, and moronic?
Yeah, and charge it while I'm in Greece. I couldn't believe Newt even showed up at that stage. He's got no staff. They all bolted on him.
No, that man's solid. No, he's solid brass, dude.
Oh, and it seems like all of his staff have decided to go back and work for their previous boss, who's Rick Perry. I think they're saying...
Right, well, because America needs a flinty, squinty-eyed, perfect-haired freak from Texas in the Republican field. It just wouldn't be right otherwise.
Yeah, and the other thing about their pageant that they had on Monday, that it all really did seem to be much an exercise about trying to crush Mitt Romney, which is interesting. And now... there's a lot of coverage about Mitt Romney possibly not having the residency that he claims that he has. So, I mean, but meanwhile, while all that's going on, there was still more coverage.
I don't know why they bother doing all that with Romney, because the magic underwear will take care of it all.
Yeah, and what's been killing me, though, is still they had this debate, but yet more airtime was still given over those couple of days to people that aren't running, namely Palin, Perry, that fat bastard Christie, you know, all these people that actually aren't running. And I just...
Because that field is so pitiful and pathetic that they're yearning for somebody that they can actually hang their hat on to get behind.
Well, I'm starting to wonder, you know, is this again a repeat of the Republicans in 96, when they were basically up against Bill Clinton, realized that they didn't really have a chance, needed another 4 years to get the coffers rebuilt up so that there was something to steal again, And that right. this is one of these setups that they're just letting this thing be a joke because they really don't want to get in there yet. And maybe it's waiting for 2016 to bring the next Bushy in.
That makes perfect sense to me, because at this point, why would they need someone? Why would they need a Republican? I still think there's a lot of stealth involved here, where they take all the money they raise, and remember, they're going to have even more Citizens United money this time around, John, and they're going to take all of that money and they're going to pour it into shoring up the House and retaking the Senate, and basically setting up a situation where they get to do the flinch game with Obama and see if he really will use his veto pen. If that makes you feel as creepy as it does me, we're on the same page.
Yeah, my stomach just kind of tightened up as you said that. And then obviously you've heard the news of the day is, Anthony has succumbed to the pressure and stepped down.
Yeah, he needs to spend more time with his family.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you, though, and I still don't know yet if it was one of Howard Stern's people, but there was some idiot heckler in there sitting there screaming, hey, Wiener, are you bigger than 7 inches? And, just screaming that he's a pervert and all this, and nobody really did anything to stop this guy. And,
No, anybody who yelled at a Republican would, of course, have been tackled to the ground, hooded, and sent to Guantanamo.
Well, yeah, and I mean, there is a little bit of a, it's a sex scandal, supposedly, the sex scandal that had no sex. This is part of the thing. It's like, wow, this guy's losing his gig for...
Well, that's what Bill Maher said that was so accurate. That's what makes it most pathetic of all.
Yeah.
The guy's involved in a sex scandal where he didn't get,
Didn't get any.
Laid.
Yeah, the reading of the messages on Maher's show, I was half torn between buckling over in laughter and feeling ill, and couldn't avoid watching it.
No, see, I had to laugh because Jane Lynch is just that good.
Oh, she's hilarious. She's hilarious. And they played it just brilliantly, and the fact that it was not edited at all, There is this must be something with people that end up in power. There is, well, I guess it's probably there to begin with, this ego thing. Because there just definitely sounded like to be a bit of seriously inflated ego in some of those comments. But hey, that might just be my impression.
No, I don't think so. I think it really was.
Yeah. And
I don't think the ego was the only thing that was inflated. they make subdermal pumps for that.
Ooh.
Well, there's one. Yeah. Okay. There's my trip to the gutter for tonight.
Well, but the one thing that I seem to have gotten some, regardless of how people have been coming down on, whether they think. Wiener should have, stepped down or not, or how this played out, and some people really think it's nothing but a Republican slime routine, which I don't buy into. Yeah, timing maybe, they might have held on.
No, wait a minute, John. Wait a minute. We were just talking about the transcripts of the tweets.
Yeah.
Go back and if you can stop laughing or crying, either one. Pay very close attention. Pay very close attention to the content of her tweets.
Oh yeah. Gonna screw
that
them.
Was a, that was a boat race. The fix was in, John. She was a plant. Can't you give me a phone call? Because Andrew Breitbart would love to have audio of that. Now, wouldn't he?
This is true. Okay. I might buy into that, but,
And even that last line about those Republicans. That was so over the top. I'm kind of in a public space, so they probably wouldn't appreciate me saying that.
Yeah.
It's bad enough I'm sitting here talking off into space, and I've got my Bluetooth in my head, and people think that I'm like, I've had a couple of people throw money at me. you know, because I just looked like a crazy homeless dude, you know, talking into space. Even that was so over the top as to make me go, come on. No, really, you're that bad off? You can't see when you're being set up? Because it was. I mean, that's like having the FBI come along to a couple of guys on a basketball court and say, hey, buddy, if we get you some new Nike Air LeBrons, will you try to blow up the Sears Tower? And they go, yeah, okay. You're under arrest. But no, how do you not know that's a setup?
All right. I actually hadn't put the severity of those comments.
This is Breitbart, John. He doesn't deal in legitimate journalism. This didn't just happen to fall into his lap. This is a more refined version of Acorn.
See,
ask yourself, why is it with everything Andrew Breitbart there's a sex angle? Whether it's James O'Keefe
right.
and Acorn, it's either race or sex. And sometimes, if you can work them together, both. But in this case, it's sex. And, of course, there's an element of race involved, too, because Anthony Weiner is Jewish.
Yeah, and Susan loved pointing out that there was a couple of conservative Republicans that said all he needed to do was find Jesus and he'd be all right.
You know what? He would be all right, except politically he would be dead in probably in his borough in New York.
I mean, just the stupidity of telling Jew to find Jesus.
Right. No, but if he found Jesus and moved to the busted knuckle Kansas, I am Anthony Weiner. I am a Jew for Jesus. Yeah, no, that'd be great. And I'm of the school of thought the late great Sam Kinison, peace be upon him, or maybe it was the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, who said, you know, Jews for Jesus is kind of like, you know, I don't know, rockers against drugs. Totally oxymoronic.
I think they both made statements to that effect. Trying to cover your prayer meeting vibe yesterday. Have you heard about the backlash against? Well, have you heard about Rick Perry's prayer vigil that he's wanting to have, a Christians only thing in Texas?
No, he had one and it didn't rain until Barack Obama showed up. I thought that would have been enough of a sign from the Almighty.
Well, this thing was being backed by the American Family Association and a whole slew of ministers have revolted against him, explaining exactly why the separation of church and state is what it is and how what he has done, by possibly even using public funds to set this thing up, is breach separation of church and
state. Yeah, but you know what? That tells me, John, that he's getting seriouser and seriouser about the possibility of a run, because what's missing out there is somebody who can really light the fire under the the religion industry and the morans.
Yeah. Well,
and that's the kind of, there they are, just like Nero, they're persecuting us for our faith in Christ again.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, did you see this story out of, I can't remember where, a couple of disabled people who happened to be gay?
Yes.
Tried to go to the local swimming pool?
I covered that yesterday, and the guy in a public swimming pool says, the Bible says, you can't swim here.
Because the Bible says I can.
That was really creepy. And all I thought was, you know, some knuckle-dragging, bloody, bully kind of a jerk actually going and trying to just take advantage of a couple of people who have, you know, intellectual issues. I mean, it's just, you know, completely just scumbag material.
Oh, it's pathetic. And the fact that, you know, they had their assistants there and staff and everything, and they argued, well, if you don't leave, Jesus tells me I get to call the police on you for trespassing.
That's just, I mean.
So they all, and the two guys left weeping. See, there are little demons in hell who are stomping up and down on the bellows waiting for that evil bastard.
Yeah, That was out of Kentucky, Texas Betsy informs me.
Was it Kentucky? Yeah. Well, that surprises me not.
Well, going back to the Rick Perry thing, you know, you're saying, you know, this is part of him gearing up, and I agree. And what I mentioned yesterday too is there's a subliminal strain in here too by setting up this event. He's doing the, you know, we got to come and pray for the country because it's in trouble. The country's in trouble because the heathens are in control.
Yeah, but we can't have none of them Muslims or Jews are praying for it.
Yeah. So we need to have the good Texans. You know, like the right. Good people of Alabama, as is in the DBT lyrics. You know, the white
right.
Christians. You know, we got and it's.
Oh, I gotta shift gears on you real quick because I gotta get back to Agnes in a little bit.
Okay.
But I gotta tell you just a little bit about this drive across country. I don't think I've ever driven this far before. And I'd certainly never been here before. But I just have to say this because I live in, you know, I'm very jaded about where I live because West Virginia has been made, you know, it's such a beautiful, magnificent place if they would just leave it alone. But it's become a very hateful place for me, John.
Yeah.
Because I know what poison's in the water and I know what poison is in the air. And I know that there's not a single elected representative down there who has anybody on my side of this argument's best interest at heart. So that's actually very jaded. So we took off out of there Monday and got out of West Virginia and started driving across Ohio and got out of the hills. And all of a sudden, I started seeing this small town America that I'd almost forgotten still existed. Mm. You know, little main streets with impeccably kept buildings and these farm fields out from the... And it just dawned on me. I went, you know, wow. There still is an America worth fighting for.
Yeah.
And I know that may sound crazy. And you know what? All those little small towns in southwestern Ohio or whatever, those little small towns may have been populated by entirely by the McCain and Bush and Palin voters, but it's still worth saving. And so we crossed out of Ohio... And we crossed through Indiana, and we stopped for the night in Crawfordsville, Indiana, and it's where the campus of Wabash College is.
Yeah, I know the area.
And it's an old liberal arts college that was founded by a bunch of guys, graduates from Dartmouth, who all shared a common denominational faith, but they decided from the very beginning that it would be non-denominational. That education would be the first and foremost goal of it. And I was just blown away by it. And then the next day we take off and we get done with Indiana and we're up into Illinois and long about Bloomington, Illinois, Ferg, like some sort of, bosun's mate in the crow's nest of a sailing ship. Ferg hollers, wind farm off the port bow, Dad. And there it was, John. It was this, I mean, it went on almost as far as the eye could see. Just wind turbine after wind turbine after wind turbine after wind turbine, all just gently churning, turning there. No birds or bats just getting chewed up as if they were in some sort of the green energy Vegematic.
Yeah.
Just generating electricity. And so as we went, wow, is Illinois a long state.
Yeah, it is.
And flat. I really did. After a while, I began to feel like a ship at sea because, you know, we were just plowing straight ahead, straight ahead, straight ahead, and all these seas of green all around me. And every now and then, these massive wind installations. And I looked at Agnes and I said, by God, I am going back home when I go back home, and I am going to be filled with a righteous fury to see that wind farm built on Coal River Mountain. We are going to find a way to build that because... The thing that blew me away, and Agnes even turned on the video recorder on her phone and caught it for a minute, the thing that struck me as I was looking at all those things in Illinois is I couldn't help remembering hearing some fiend of coal saying, well, you know, wind and solar may have a place in our national energy mix somewhere down the road, but right now the technology doesn't exist, and we need clean coal for our base load energy needs. And so, you know, I looked at Agnes and I said, so these are all like imaginary wind turbines because they don't really work because the technology doesn't exist, you know. And so, you know, I want to take pictures and I just want to hold them up in front of Don Blankenship and go, this is a wind turbine and it really works and it really works in 2011, guys. And then we crossed into Wisconsin. And I know we've got a lot of listeners in Wisconsin and Minnesota. I got to tell you, John, I am in love with this part of the country.
I haven't been there in a long time. See, my family all comes from the Midwest. So, like, you know, my aunt, my favorite aunt that just passed away, Minneapolis, St. Paul for like 45, 50 years. My mom's family all comes out of Iowa. Stepdad's friends and all that, all Wisconsin, all that area. Used to go there every couple of years and do the drive from New Jersey. And you want to go through a long state, dude? Do Pennsylvania from east to west.
I've done Tennessee from east to west, and that's, you know, that's another one.
It's a whole thing.
But at least there's some topography there. But I was, you know, my eyes were messing with me a little bit. I'm supposed to have a new eyeglass prescription that I don't have yet. And after a while, I was getting that 300 mile stare on that. Snap out of it, Bob.
Yeah, yeah.
But we crossed into Wisconsin and got up past Madison and entered that Wisconsin Dells area, and I've never seen a place more beautiful in my entire life.
It is the Midwest. I mean, it's just there's so much heart and soul and I hope it's still like this because I haven't been there in so long. There was still a lot of local businesses.
Oh yeah. And you know, when I get back and I've got a little time to gather my wits and stuff, I just want to talk about the Midwest a little bit and what I perceive of it because it's a very special part of America. And the beauty, you know, going through Wisconsin and this rolling conversation going on inside the van about how the glaciers came down and scrubbed everything clean. And just breathtaking beauty all around, as far as the eye can see, and the people. Because we stopped. I wasn't going to leadfoot this thing or deadhead it or anything. We stopped and we talked to the locals, and you know, everybody is nice. And I guess they've got a phrase for it around here, Minnesota nice. I'm really curious to hear Minnesota mean, John, because the nice is so nice. That I can just imagine the Minnesota means like, oh, I am so perturbed with you, I don't quite know what I'm going to do.
If memory serves me right, when you hear nothing is when you should be worried. Albert also has informed me here that you were right where he is. He's telling me he's in Northeast Ohio. He says, he was in the Driftless.
No, because we shot up straight through Rockford, came into Wisconsin in Beloit, then up to Madison, and then angled from Madison up through Wisconsin Dells, ultimately, you know, coming into Minneapolis via Eau Claire.
Right, right.
But I thought about Albert all the way there, and I thought about our other family members of the Horn that are all. And I understand why people get so passionate about this part of the world. And it's so lovely. I'm almost willing to think that the winter would make, even as hard as the winters are, it would be worthwhile.
Well, you know, like my memories of Minneapolis, the city is designed for those winters. You know, so most people go from, you know.
Well, they know how to cope with them.
Well, they go from their heated apartment to their heated garage to their heated car to what used to be really well-maintained and plowed roads to, you know, under sidewalk, you know, ice melting and all of that to, you know, where you drive into work to your heated underground parking garage and you almost can live without ever actually having to get fully outside.
It's a different kind of winter than what we get in West Virginia, and God knows what little I experienced in Alabama. You know, when I was a kid growing up in Alabama, a half an inch of snow falls on the ground, they declare martial law, shut down the schools, and all the mamas go to the grocery store and buy up all the milk, bread, and eggs, and I guess, you know, you you eat French toast for the next 3 days until martial law is relaxed. You know, because it takes that long to clear the half an inch of snow. But in West Virginia, it's a very wet, heavy snow. Everybody I've talked to up here says, this is a really different kind of snow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It wouldn't be able to get as deep as it does if it was heavy like East
and, Virginia. And, you know, David in Tennessee, who lived up here for a while, was telling me, he said, a clear winter sky is a kind of blue you cannot imagine because there's no water in the air to challenge to modify the color.
Yeah.
And it's like looking straight into space. I mean, it blew my mind. Night before last, it was a clear night. We had some rain coming in yesterday, just this clear evening. And I was looking around at 10 o'clock at night going, well, damn, it's still light out here. And then I looked up and went, dummy, you know, you're in the north. And at that point, I told Dave, pardon my redneck attitude, but I feel like I'm probably 15 minutes from the Arctic Circle. He said, well, you're not, but you can be forgiven for thinking that way because you are, after all, a nice southern boy.
They're being all right to you.
You know, Alabama, you know, we think of Kentucky as a northern state, you know, because they didn't declare. They were neutral.
Jesus.
They can't be trusted. That's the way it goes down there. And that's the stuff that you're dipped by the toe in from birth. And, you know, it's another one of those things that you spend a lifetime recovering from. But we're having a blast, and I want to thank everybody who's continued to contribute to the horn in my absence because being away is a little bit scary because things do have a way of drying up, but a lot of people have continued to remember that we got bills to pay.
Yeah, I've been plugging.
And I really appreciate it.
I've been plugging it as much as I can without becoming overbearing. So you're back on Monday. Is that the schedule?
No, we're traveling Monday. I'm hoping to be back on the air on Tuesday.
Okay.
I've got a better sense for how long this is going to take now.
Yeah.
If I do 500 miles a day, we'll be there on Monday night.
That's
so probably look for the first day on the air Tuesday.
All right.
I think I was a little bit overly. I was a little overly optimistic about how long the drive would take. But you know, I'm 48 now, and I'm not quite the little lead foot maniac that I used to be.
Yeah, and the idea of driving 16 hours straight tends to not be as viable anymore.
No, and especially in light of the fact that I'm no longer caffeine tolerant.
Well,
that makes it really difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, it would. So anything else that? So we talked about your DC trip. We talked about stuff that you've been doing there. Is there anything else that you need to inform people?
Well, remember, we're still stoked, and you're going to be involved in helping walk me through some of this. We're still stoked about the PRISM West Virginia Summer Academy coming up when we get back. We got a week down for me to learn all that equipment, and then we're back at it again for 3 weeks. Ferg and I will be living in a hotel. But that's, there'll be content on the horn. It just won't necessarily be from 6 to 9. There'll be 8-10 hours of content every day.
Wow.
So that's coming up. Yeah, that's coming up. And just and thanks for all the good wishes. I had a couple of lovely notes. One from Faith who said, I hope you enjoy it up in our neck of the woods. And I got to tell you guys, I have. I'd love to come up here for a month, preferably in July. I'm sorry. I'm a hard winter sissy, but. No, I'd love to just really get to know the town because it's it's magic. It's magic. It's just a different vibe from the south. It's a different vibe from the east. It's just a different way of looking at the world. At least by virtue of everything that I can see from every single person I've talked to. It's just magnificent. I'll tell you, okay, you want to measure that? You want a metric for this? Agnes looks at me and says, you know, I could love it here, Bob. And what does that say?
That's saying a fair bit.
Yeah. Exactly. So that gives you an idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But John, and last of all, and certainly not least, I want to thank you for covering, because one, I got notes from people saying, God, it's good to hear John again. We miss John. Bring John back.
It's coming. I'll tell you, it took me a couple of days to find my feet again. It's been a while.
Oh, radio at 8 o'clock in the morning just can't be any fun.
And it reminded me of actually just kind of what an effort it is to do 3 hours of this. Not to be like, oh, bitch, moan, complain. That's not it. Afterwards, I'm wrecked, man, and I forget, and I can't, and I'm sometimes amazed how you are able to do it. The way that you do it, just night in, night out.
Well, that's things that I think maybe not that we're poor, pitiful me or anything like that, but this is not a faucet that you turn on and off. And especially the way we do it here at the Horn, this isn't something that we do as entertainment. This is a raw beating heart every time the Horn goes live. Whether it's you, whether it's me, or whether it's Rick Smith. And it's an humbling experience, but I understand what you mean, because when I get back, I'm going to feel like I've been gone for a month.
I've been a couple of weeks.
Yeah. But we've been doing some great missionary work here, talking to people about mountaintop removal. Trying to get people out to see the last mountain tomorrow, because we got to pack the room, and I got a feeling it's going to be the talk of the entire convention by the time it's done. I mean, we've got a lot of interesting keynote speakers and stuff, but I got a feeling that mountain's going to be that movie's going to be the talk.
Good, good. It's all registered to go to all the international festivals and whatnot, I hope.
It's been to a bunch already, but they're pushing it like crazy. And, shameless promotion moment. We gotta figure out a way to, send Bob to Australia to help push the film.
Yeah, we're working on that.
but you know what? I had finally figured out, they screened it down in Charleston last week, and, Bill Haney, who's the producer, said, Bob, come on down. I didn't. I had to sit. I said, no, I can't. Because there are, really, really serious fighters in this struggle. People like Maria Gano and Bo Webb and others who were down there. And I didn't want to take away a minute from them. So I was talking to Bill later, and he said, why didn't you come down? I said, dude, you ever seen Galaxy Quest? He goes, yeah. I said, I'm Guy Fleegman. I'm the guy with the red shirt and no lines.
I don't know. I don't know about that, Bob. But yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
So I don't know. I don't know. Tomorrow at the panel after the movie, I may introduce myself as Guy Fleegman and just see how many people get it.
That's pretty funny. I like that idea. I think that's hilarious. So, looking forward to having you back on, man, because this is a lot of work.
Yeah, no kidding. We'll have four days of semi-normal broadcasting, understanding that normal is nothing more than a setting in a dryer.
Yeah, no kidding.
Thank you, Peter. Mm. We'll have 4 days of broadcasting, and then it's off to the Prism series.
Mm. Oh,
But the thing is, what we're going to be doing at the Prism series is going to be sort of a signpost toward what the Horn may eventually turn into. Because
right.
We have, and you know what it is, we have some awesome, mind-bendingly cool technology to work with.
Oh yeah, and we're bringing the gear up in many many levels, and it's gonna, I think it's gonna end up making your remotes not only be easier for you to deal with, even though
I got this crazy thing going on right now that for the life of me I can't sort out. For some reason or another, the desk that I use on remotes.
Yeah.
I can't get playback into my cans to save my life. And I know this board like the back of my hand. And this is a problem that's been going on for like 6 months now, and I still don't have sorted.
Hey.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I can get, you know, like I can get it out to the stream or whatever. But if I've got the cans plugged in, I cannot get playback.
You
like,
can't
to,
hear
to play.
All right. Well, maybe this is
no.
Something.
I can't hear anything that's pre-recorded, which is a real pain in the butt. But that's inside baseball, and nobody wants to hear about that.
Yeah. Okay, that's something we'll have to talk about off air.
Exactly.
I'm getting by pretty well. To do this and to do another job that I was doing, I picked up this $200 Behringer USB thing with built-in compressors. And for being a very scary cheap thing, it seems to have worked out all right this week.
I don't know what my audio is like on your end, but man, you sound great.
Yeah, it's working. It's all right. It's the same as the other old one I had, except it's just that much newer and has a USB thing on it. The other one was way past its due date. It was dying a horrible death. I had to go, this is seriously inside baseball, but I went to go do some teaching a couple of weeks ago. And that's the reason that I bought this, because I was going to have to give some audio examples. I was afraid, it might not look too professional. I'm like, excuse me, everyone, I got to do the zenith on this thing. Bang, 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 to get it to work. not exactly what I was looking, the impression I was wanting to give the first time I was going to go and teach. I might want to fix that. But anyway, Bob, I'm going to let you go. I know you're in a public place and it's all kind of confused and everything over there. And
if anybody drops any more money in front of me, I'm just going to have to go into the bridge and get me a bottle of Screw Top Wine.
Didn't you bring a guitar with you? Maybe you could go down there and actually make some money.
Oh, man, how I wish I had. Because you know what? Matt Osborne and I have worked up a parody of The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald that is for the ages.
I want the lyric.
The Wreck of the Rep Michelle Bachman.
I'm liking it.
Okay. Here's the teaser. Here's the first couple of lines. I know Bob's singing, but we'll get over it. The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the woman they called Batshit Crazy.
I like it.
And it only gets worse.
It'd be good to tear that song apart, because that is like the busker solo acoustic guys. Like, it's one of the top five most hated songs to have to play.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is.
And there's always some drunk that is going to play American Pie, or play the record of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And if they come up and like put $5 in the bucket and as they request it, you just turn around sitting there going, that'll get you two or three verses.
Yeah, that gets you three bars.
You want the whole song? You better keep pumping in there, because God, they're great classic songs, but they're horrible to play. So boring.
Oh, no doubt. Well, John, have yourself a lovely evening.
All right,
buddy. And hey to all the Horn family, and thanks for your kind thoughts. And hopefully we'll be in touch tomorrow.
All right. I'm not going to be on tomorrow. I was not able to free up my Saturday morning. I was waiting, and it was kind of weather dependent, and the weather's worked out where I can't do it. So I'm glad I got you on tonight, because this is my last night for the week.
Awesome. Well, I will talk to you soon, brother.
All right, brother. We can't wait to hear from you on Tuesday.
All right. See you, man.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye.
And that's the one, the only Bob Kincaid, host of this here program. And he's been a busy guy, and I'm very sorry to hear that, Betsy. That sucks. Where was I? Anyway, Bob, I think he's moving up the ladder of stature a bit with this film. You know, I mean, I know he probably only makes a cameo appearance, but I've seen his face as the screenshot for a lot of listings for the film on the web, and there's a screenshot of him on almost everyone that Sorry, being slightly distracted. Some unfortunate news. Texas Betsy, unfortunately, has just become unemployed. She's been fighting with the school district, and now she's actually officially unemployed. The saga of what it is to live in America these days rolls on. I'm very sorry to hear that, Betsy. I hope something comes through soon. Why are we letting teachers go? I don't understand this. If we're falling so far behind everybody else, why are we letting teachers go? Can anyone explain that to me? Why we're letting teachers go when we're falling behind the rest of them?
What'd you say?
You want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
No, it's not Bob.
It's still me!
John Fox down here in Australia on the beautiful Central Coast, which finally has sunshine again. Really, 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 really wet week. Pretty horrible. But good to hear from Bob Kincaid. We'll air on Tuesday and maybe some stuff over the weekend possibly. So keep an eye on Bob's Twitter. Keep an eye on the website. We'll let you know what's going to happen over the weekend. So anyway, why don't we go straight to the phones because we have a David from Maine on the line. How you going, buddy?
Yep, John, it's your last day. Do we need to get you a office cake or something?
No, no. No, I got plenty of toasters to give away though.
Did you see what I said in the room about I'd come up with the political party for the horn, the official name?
No, what was that?
Homeless guy talking into space, and the logo's going to be pretty sweet too.
I could just. Sorry, I was even laughing when Bob made the comment, you know, earlier, because I could just picture it, you know, with the Bluetooth in the middle of like everybody setting up, and there's Bob sitting there having this big old conversation with nobody. Yeah, okay. So you have concepts for the logo then?
Well, you know, it's going to be a homeless guy talking in space. I think it speaks for itself.
We're talking.
We'll get Mike Judge. We'll get Mike Judge to do it, right?
Yeah, in space, no one can hear you scream. Because that's what.
Now I see you're jockeying for position for the slogan. Well, you know, the only thing I can say about this week and about the Congressman Wiener is this, is that I was telling my my dad this the other day. I said the best way he could have played this was to make this into a joke. He goes away for 2 weeks. He comes back. He does the Daily Show circuit, and everybody looks at him and says, wow, that guy's tough.
You're probably right. You're probably right. I mean, I don't think he could have handled this, you know, much worse than he did. I mean, he could have made it worse by continuing to deny. But, you know, I do feel a bit slack for discounting the idea that it was that there may have been a honeypot situation here. You know, after Bob kind of, you know, talked about the language in those messages, that, you know, it was so over the top. It's making me think again, you know, okay, maybe this is more Breitbart, you know, shenanigans, but boy, if it is the case.
Do you know what? There probably was a few of those lost in the mix, but I think the thing to take away from this is that when you are on Twitter, and when you are on the internet in general, it's to lay low and don't taunt your political opponents, because, like I said before, the game board is rigged.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll take you down incredibly fast. Because that's how psychotic they are.
Well, you know, they think
of this like a job, or rather, this is a mission. This is a challenge. But they don't. But see, the thing is when you talk to people who are conservative, they do not understand that they're playing on a rigged playing field for their benefits. A lot of conservatives don't understand that, and when you try to point that out to them, then they'll toss back to you about biased media. You'll get no argument from me from there, but what they've really crammed down the throats of so many people is liberal media bias. You hear it everywhere. It's the perfect the perfect evil virus, I guess.
It's such complete crap, though. You know.
I know.
I avoided a Facebook conversation, getting into something on Facebook. There's a musician here in Australia that I'm really good friends with, and mm-hmm. You know, we're actually debating a carbon tax over here at the moment. And a couple of weeks ago, there was actually like a couple thousand people showed up to protest for the carbon tax, right?
Mm.
And this friend of mine did a whole post sitting there going, the media tried to make it as though this pro-the-tax protest was somehow media organized,
mm.
Right? And I'm thinking... And this is a guy who as an Australian likes to profess about Alex Jones and all kinds of other things. And then I'm sitting there going, well, that doesn't even fit with what you'd normally be spewing, because if you thought that there was actually, you know, that it's much more of a corporate control. He even said corporate control, but it was a set up protest.
Mm.
You know, but it's like, well, if it was a whole media knockup deal, it would have been the people shouting it down.
You know, the Republicans and the conservatives are so good at making people, they're geniuses at it. They're so good and such geniuses at making people believe that you are part of their team, part of their club. And it doesn't matter what they do, and there's this constant. You have to you have to just really just look at it and marvel and be like, you really can't believe that all of the memes that are coming out now all across this country, the fact that we are, you know, the fact that people are actually attacking education is just a clear sign of, okay, time out. We've given way too much time to for all of this nonsense, and the fact, and this is destructive, and this is terrorism.
Well, yeah, you know, it is. You know, I mean, I really just cannot understand this constant idea that teachers can be paid too much. You know, I and you know that we might have too many teachers. Just the concept of that, not even just, you know, on a political level, just like on a fundamentally human logical level. You know, if
I think the whole aspect of monetizing our education system and saying what's a waste, immediately when you say that's a waste, you are playing into the narrative, the framing words, everything.
Oh yeah.
Because if you really look at it, people, if you really look at it, you can look at everything as a waste. If you really want to play that game, because everything's going to perish anyways. I mean that's the way I look at it when someone tells me that. I mean, are you serious? But then, you know, I mean, it's such a great distraction. It's such a great game of distraction that I just think eventually we need to confront these Michelle Rhee types and be like, you know, I don't understand how you even, please explain to me. You bring out like a chalkboard and say, all right, I want you to illustrate to me how voucher schools are going to work.
Yeah.
And you hand them the chalk and you sit down and say, go. And they have a time period of like an hour to do it.
Yeah.
And that's how you expose them. You don't, you say, those are nice talking points. You stop them in the track. You say, those are nice talking points and that's a nice bumper sticker. But really explain to me how this system is going to benefit.
But Michelle Bachmann, someone like Michelle Bachmann will never allow herself to be in that situation. You only have to go back to the story a couple weeks ago about that, you know, middle school girl or whatever that, you know, challenged her to a history debate after the whole Paul Revere thing and, you know, and basically laughed it off going, ha, 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 silly child. But
yeah,
that's exactly what that girl was setting up is what you're saying. You know, she wanted to basically, you know, get her out of the controlled situation because that's the whole thing. Fox, the...
Well, I was actually talking about Michelle Rhee, this Asian woman from D.C. with the Waiting for Superman movie and the fact she was on Oprah talking about the voucher school system.
Oh, I don't know about this. Sorry.
A lot of people were promoting her. What doesn't make sense to me is it's like, basically what she wants to do is she wants to privatize this makes a lot of sense. It really does. Privatize the school systems and trim the fat and all, you know, all of these little buzzwords.
What's
but then
that?
When you look into it. Yeah, exactly. This is the other thing. I mean, the fat, hey, you know, the fat is in New Jersey. It's Chris Christie. Give me a rim shot, please.
Yeah,
but anyway, I mean, I think Chris Christie is pretty, it's pretty dangerous for 2016. I hope everyone sees what's happening right now, the fact of what he's done in New Jersey. He doesn't care if he's going to be a one-term governor because he's planning on running for president.
I don't doubt that one bit. And to me, he's just the poster child of the fat pig right-winger. I mean, you know, him talking about how other people have to cut back, and it's just like, doesn't look like you've tightened your belt much in, like, your lifetime, mate.
You know? I mean, and then you have the helicopter rides.
Yeah. And me making a comment about his size, I can say something because I used to be really, really overweight. And I actually can say this. And I look at someone who actually gives what they profess, which is just constant consumption, and you just look at the physical mark that this guy makes on the world. And it's just like, wow, you really just don't know when to stop, do you? You just want more.
Yeah, I agree. This evening, I have called about something controversial again. Are you shocked, John?
No, not at all.
Well, John, apparently in the hip-hop community, and this has been getting serious traction, and this is something that I wanted to bring your attention to. Rapper Lupe Fiasco said on the CBS on a CBS show called What's Trending, they were just talking about his album in general, and Lupe Fiasco said, and this is why I think President Barack Obama is the biggest terrorist in the world. And this created shockwaves in the hip-hop community. You're looking at someone who's from Chicago, who's black. I mean, when you look at something like this on a scale, it's like a rapper saying, it's like a rapper coming out and saying they're gay and they're a gangster, and it's that kind of resonance that's in the hip hop community right now. But anyways,
what did he say?
What's interesting? What's that?
What did he say?
He basically said that he made a comment that he thought that President Barack Obama was the biggest terrorist in the world, and hip hop took that really
badly
serious.
Yes.
But the thing about it is, the thing about Lupe that's different than him is he's not apologizing. His label's probably going nuts. He's not apologizing, and I wanted to bring this to your attention. Russell Simmons, the pioneer of Def Jam Records.
Yeah.
He was also, the co-founder of Def Jam Records with Rick Rubin. And
yep.
It goes on. I mean, the history is there for the industry. Russell Simmons decided to reach out to him, and he did this interview. And the first thing off the bat, he asked him. It's on the website Global Grind. If people want to get into it, it's a really deep conversation. He says, "It's good to speak to you. I heard there was a lot of talk about the comments you made a few days ago about the president, and I wanted you to give a chance to further discuss your thoughts. I respect you as an artist and a poet, and I think your opinion is important to the national discussion. I kind of understand that some of our foreign policy has been very hurtful, and sometimes we do things that are not conscious. I didn't really think that Obama was any more aggressive about our business interests or America's interests in terms of foreign policy than of the previous president. In fact, I believe there have been changes under the administration. So I just wanted to get clarity on your words so I can send them out there and the people understand, because America in the past has made some horrible choices. When you think about 300,000 or whatever number of innocent Muslims we killed in Iraq, or when you think about some of the choices we made that have hurt people, but we only count our dead in Iraq, we don't count theirs. We don't know the amount of Islamophobia the country exudes, and we say things like we're going on a crusade and these things are scary. What do you think?" And I'm only going to read you the Lupe's answer, but I encourage people to check out the interview, because, again, this is something that's really profound when you have somebody from the black community coming out. Because here's something that people have to understand. The peer pressure for black people in the hip-hop community and in any community abroad, if they are African-Americans and black people, they have to march in line with Barack Obama. It's a given. But anyways, this was Lupe's answer. He says, "America was based on a hypocrisy, and what we had done is basically an extension of that hypocrisy. I think that the Constitution was a hypocrisy in the same way you look at somebody like Glenn Beck as a hypocrite. On one level, I agree with a lot of stuff that Glenn Beck says. That is to give you context for me and where my statements come from. I agree with the ideals that he speaks about when he talks about family values and when he talks about taking care of your own community. He talks a real good, wholesome kind of game. The problem is he's not talking to anybody but white people. It's really just the intention and the context of it. So there's a certain level of hypocrisy that exists in America, and it started back from the Constitution, all the people who wrote the Constitution, everything that they put in there, it was good game. But all those people had slaves. The majority of the people had slaves or were sympathetic to slaveholders or were direct recipients of money from slavery and things like that, and had business and dealt with plantations and people that had slaves. There's a certain level of hypocrisy that existed from the inception of this country all the way up until today, and we're really just facing the remnants." And it goes on from it goes on from there, and this is a three-part interview that Russell Simmons is doing with Lupe Fiasco. And again, this is territory that I've been wanting to see for some time, because I don't think people really, I don't think you really understand. As soon as Barack Obama was on the ballot, if you were a black person and you were an artist, that's who you had to cheer for.
Right. Sandra and I spoke about this a little bit the other day.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a question that I didn't know how to phrase, you know, and it wasn't that I was worried about Sandra taking offense. But, you know, I kind of asked, you know, do you really think that the black community is going to stick that tightly behind him? Because, you know, wouldn't there be a bit of, okay, this guy screwed us around as much as all them white bastards did all these years. He ain't no
right.
different. And she pretty much said, oh, you're going to have a little bit of that, but not so much of
Well, see, here's the thing about it that makes Lupe different. Here's a guy who on Twitter, instead of tweeting about what girls he thinks are sexy or you know, some nonsense, he's actually started his own book club. And he encourages his readers. He encourages his readers of his Twitter timeline and his listeners of his music to read these books, and then he wants their thoughts on them. And see, that's what makes him different. And one of the points he made was, he said, you see, this is the context that the media likes to put. He said when he mentioned Obama being a terrorist, he said this is what the media picked up on. He goes, but they don't want to talk about any of the things that I'm associated with. They just want to continue pointing out of context quotes to make me to vilify me. And basically what his point was he knew that was going to happen. He's a bright guy. For those people who don't know, you should check out his music.
He sounds like a smart guy. He sounds like he comes from that ideology of the lyrics should not only be delicious, but they should be nutritious.
Yeah, but the thing is that there is a serious problem with the fact of trying to silence this discussion we're having. No matter if you consider it too far left or too controversial to talk about at this point, I'm telling you, if you keep on pushing it down and continuing to try to silence dissent in the sense, in the same sense, what was going on with the black community and the fact that Lupe was expected to be silent. He actually had people come to him and say, you can't say that, you know? When you go that direction, that's, you're headed for a catastrophe when you do that. So
absolutely.
I think the fact that Russell Simmons reached out to Lupe like this, took this quote, this is what they, you know what they should have done? This is what they should have done with Cornel West. But did you see Cornel West on Bill Maher? You didn't see him on Bill Maher. Everybody just went silent and went like, Cornel who? Who?
I never found anything wrong with any. I understand what you're saying, because I didn't find anything wrong with what Cornell said.
Well, I didn't either, but my main thing with Cornell was, as soon as you bring up the fact that Barack Obama was embracing his white side, game over. You know what
yeah.
I mean? The fact that when Christopher Hedges was doing that article, and that makes me wonder about Christopher Hedges. I'm like, you didn't stop the tape and say, wait a minute, you know, when you bring across this, you really think it's his white side? And then when he brought up the points about the Jewish culture, and he was talking about, you know, when you go along those lines, that's another line that's like.
I didn't catch that bit. I'll go back and.
Yeah, you'll have to look into it. But my point is this. Here's what I want you to take away from this, ladies and gentlemen. Why is it that Cornel West is ignored? If you find his comments offensive, or if you find him too radical, or you find him just completely, it was completely just a rant or a manifesto, and he had some complete, it was a matter of pride for him, and he was bitter at Obama. That's fine. But listen to me. Why is it that people like, for example, Ann Coulter was on Fareed Zakaria this week, John.
What?
I mean, she was. I was like, and she was arguing with Elliot Spitzer. And I was like, are you serious? This woman's a shock pundit. She's not legitimate. Why? These people, the fact that they have a book out, they think that they're a legitimate. But if you look at their conversations and you look at the discussions that they're having, they're not. They just continue to say this. Well, liberals do this and liberals do that. I mean, that's the Ann line. She just completely spouts that out. My point is this. You didn't see. Here's my point. This is the broader point. You won't see Cornel West on these shows now.
Oh, no.
He's disappeared. But you will see people like Breitbart
on and on again.
And the left has completely done a disservice by not having that discussion and bringing on Cornel West. I think he was on MSNBC, but he wasn't on Real Time with Bill Maher. And I was wondering, why the hell didn't they... You know what I would have done if I was the producer of Real Time with Bill Maher? After he said that, I would say, we got to have this discussion.
Yep.
Bring him on. We got to have this discussion with Cornel West to see what he meant.
Even if we have to dump somebody off that was booked already this week, we need to have him
on. Right. And then you look at who these shows have on, and we like to spew out so many the Democrats and the quote-unquote professional media left. I think that's what I'm gonna label it as. The professional media left. We like to dump on so many people, and instantly we can't have that discussion. And you wonder why we can't get it together. We have to. Listen, we have to have that discussion. We can't just shun somebody because they say something that offends you. You know what? If somebody says something that offends you from the left, get over it.
Yeah.
Get over it and let that person talk. And then you say your piece. And then you have a rational discussion about it, but don't give me this line, this emotional line where you're coming from and say, well, that was completely inappropriate and offensive. This is humanity. That's what it's meant to be.
Yeah.
It's meant to be offensive sometimes. It's meant to hurt your feelings, because that is what continues to build a discussion and a dialogue. If it was all so milk toast, can you even imagine where we would be as a society?
Well, I mean, if nothing's ever challenged, nothing's ever going to be changed.
Right.
You know. So, and it's interesting. I haven't been watching Bill Maher as faithfully recently as I used to. Just he got him and his kind of Israeli trip and his somewhat misogynistic side.
Xenophobic of Arab men.
Yeah. Got to me for a little while, and I just had to put him away.
But,
you know, not saying that, like, Bill, you know, but
I don't throw Maher in the trash can because I disagree with
five
of his views.
And he's a comic, too. There's a thing like, if your comedy has any value whatsoever, and good comedy always has to deal in reality or else it's not really funny, you know, if you're not every once in a while stepping on someone's toes, not with intent, but if just sometimes in the progress of doing the art that you do, you're going to step on some toes. And if you're not, you got to be thinking about whether you're actually doing your job or not. And, you know, because comedy is the one entertainment medium where people expect you to actually speak the truth.
I agree with you. And the sad reality, though, John, is that Cornel West, and if we have some serious Obama supporters who are listening, you need to listen closely to this. Cornel West had to say what he had to say for people to pay attention to those headlines. If he didn't say that, that Christopher Hedges article wouldn't even got noticed. It would have just flew back into the ether.
Yeah.
And nobody would have cared.
And I dig Chris Hedges' writing. You know, I kind of wish...
Yeah, I dig these people's writings too, but I'm telling you, there's something seriously wrong with the fact that we are silencing
I'm surprised.
Criticism about this administration.
And so Cornell has not been back on Mar since those comments.
No, he hasn't.
And he's a fairly regular guest. Now, you know, we don't know whether or not, and I'd have trouble kind of believing this, that Cornell's laying low. You know, Cornell's not one to cork it. You know, it's like, oh, you got a problem? Okay, let's talk about it some more.
You know what was interesting? No, here's the interesting thing, John. They had that woman, they had that other professor who was on Cornell's team in terms of when they would discuss these topics. I think her name was Professor Melissa Perry.
Oh,
and they had her on the show.
I love her.
And here's the amazing thing about it. They didn't talk about the topic at hand. Mar didn't even bring it up in his monologue. He never even mentioned Cornell West once. And this kind of this is serious, because the fact that you don't want to discuss these controversial and edgy topics tells me that a lot of people really just want to play the silent game on this. And if the Obama administration and Obama's people are putting pressure on other people not to talk on fair criticisms of this presidency, that's going to blow up in your face.
Yeah.
And it is blowing up in your face. Would you see somebody like Lupe saying, I've had enough, and no, I'm not going to apologize. Can you imagine his record company?
Oh, they'd be
like, holy cow, why are you still talking on the Internet?
Gotta give him credit for some balls.
Yeah, I give credit for people who say what they mean, and they explain it, and they don't duck away from it, and they say and they basically say to you, you know what, you may disagree with this, but that doesn't mean we can't have a discussion about it.
Yep. I just keep thinking. Okay, so you're saying. Was this on Bill Maher this past week where he had Melissa Harris Perry?
I think it was I think he had Melissa Harris Perry, I think, on the week during that, or the week after, because everything starts to blur in terms of when you watch things like that. But I haven't seen him, and I never saw the discussion. And here's the funny thing. You don't want to talk about Cornell West. This is the thing I really don't understand. You want to give Cornell West the silent treatment, but when Ron Paul says something like that, says something outrageous, Bill Maher doesn't want to cover that. But he'll still keep covering what he likes about Ron Paul. You know, he mentioned him on CNN again.
Did he?
He said, I think Ron Paul did pretty good during the debates. And I was like, oh, sweet Jesus. It's like what I was telling you about Reason Magazine. Reason Magazine, which is, to me, an oxymoron if you support Rand Paul. But anyways, Reason Magazine has a piece on Rand Paul and how they were talking. And this is supposed to be like a critical thinking libertarian magazine. But the fact that you even give that guy any cosign puts doubt in my mind that you even want to have a serious critical thinking discussion on the person Rand Paul, not the image.
Yeah.
I mean, again, who is this? I mean, the thing about it is this: the fact that the polls, and you have people who are like the Breitbarts and like all of this, and the fact that a black radical, because let's face it, that's what we're dealing with here. A black radical says something about Obama, and suddenly there's the silent treatment on everyone's like, shut him down. And you're not going to have that discussion. Do you know, I mean, I have to wonder if the administration understands what that looks like from a public perspective.
This mob seems to be just about as insular as the last mob when it comes to having a vibe for what public opinion is. You know, we just look
at how they're treating Kucinich now. They're calling a lot of the people who are on Team Obama are saying he's a whiner when he's talking about the issue of Libya. When he's brought up the issue of the War Powers Act.
He's only bringing up the same issues that he's been bringing up his entire career as president after president after president.
Right.
It pushes the lines on it.
Here's the big question, though. Were these diehard true blue Obama supporters, were they there? Were they as critical with the lens and completely critical when the Bush administration was doing it? They were nowhere to be found. Nowhere. So the fact that I'm seeing more and more confusing times for us ahead. You know, cue Led Zeppelin's Dazed and Confused.
I agree. I totally agree. Because you just, the whole animal of America seems to be disembodied. And it's all running around in their own circles, you know, having their little spat fights. And no one's getting anywhere. And it's getting worse. It's getting more and more polarized, and more, you bring up stuff like silencing someone like Cornel West. That's not gonna look good.
I mean, let me make this clear, just so people understand. I'm not cheerleading for Cornel West, and I don't believe everything Cornel West says.
Right.
Is the Rosetta Stone. What I'm telling you is this: the fact of the way that the media plays. On the left, the fact of the way the Democrats and the progressives, and what if you're not progressive if you're silencing this discussion and this debate, what he's trying to tell you. What he was trying to tell you was we are leaning more and more toward a plutocracy in America, and nobody wants to have that discussion.
Right.
That's what he was trying to tell you. I mean, and if that's too painful, here's the thing about it. If that's too painful for a lot of progressives to have that discussion, then we have a serious problem, and we need that addressed. And I don't care if I hurt your feelings.
Like Sandra said something the other day to the effect of what's really got her pissed off with Obama in general is the fact that he just seems to be presiding over the looting, over the destruction. You know.
Well, how about this, John? It's not that I'm not personally. See, here's the thing. This is the game that I think that a lot of politics play, politicians and politics in general play. And I think it's we can learn from something. It's not that I'm mad at Obama. I am mad. I am critical and concerned about the mentality that's coming out of that.
Yeah.
With this cloud of silencing any kind of dissent that raises serious questions what this administration is doing. Because the whole Libya situation, give me a break. Give me a break about that is such a lame way to push into a conflict with Libya. Say, well, we're doing it for the people. When has this country ever done anything for foreign people?
Well,
it's always a motive.
And you know the you can also look at it another way too. Is you know I mean for one, if Obama had gone into Libya. With a U.S.-led force, right? Even though we're still doing most of the work, the front offices that are dealing with it are NATO, right? So, with how war weary everybody is, Obama knew that I can't try and just go sell this thing. So I'm actually going to do what should have been done in the past, which is make this the world's responsibility, at least, you know, in the public face. But then what that ends up being enabling was, okay, so if we're going to do that, let's hand it off to the English who actually have the most to hide if the current Libyan regime goes down.
Right.
Because it was all, you know, Aramco and all of that stuff that helped get, you know, drawn borders with sticks with English people walking around, you know, we're talking a whole lot of the dirt before us in the more modern era dates back to the English. or to the UK. And so, we'll just pass it off to them. You know, this is kind of like your hot potato boys have it. And I think that's put us where we're at. And so in one way, in one direction, I can't see how he could have played it any different up to a point. But I also think it's helped to serve a purpose. It's like, you guys actually have more invested in this whole situation than we do. Here you go. and this is the only one of the uprising countries that's got real oil concerns, which are the most important to the UK.
But you see, John, it's the arrogance of our culture that says, well, if this isn't Western, we got to make it Western, and to not look around and see what's happening in the West as decaying. I don't know. Maybe you can't see right. Maybe you need lens crafters or something. I don't know. But there's a problem. There's a problem with the fact. Wait a minute. You want to give people more of this style of economic model that we live in right now?
The one that's falling apart.
Right, the one that's falling apart. That doesn't make any sense. Unless, John, that it's engineered and designed, and by design, for only the chosen few.
Well, I think that's what they're trying to do. I think that's exactly what they're trying to do. But, hey, man, before we run out of time...
I did want to mention one thing.
Yeah.
I was interested to see that someone had actually come to the chat room today and was looking for me. I thought they were going to pimp slap me.
Why was that?
Because of the camp, but they actually were on board with my camp idea.
I saw that. And it was one of those things that, you know, when you first brought it up, it seemed really confronting. But then after you brought it up, though,
yeah,
other people came in and, without realizing that they were kind of agreeing with you, were ending up saying similar things to you. Hey, man, I got someone on another line. I'm going to let you go and try and sneak this other one in.
All right.
Take it easy, brother. Always good to talk to you. Take care.
Yeah, good.
Welcome to the program. Who we got?
Hey, John. It's Mark Cullen from Crystal River, Florida.
Hey, Mark. How you going? We got about 15 minutes left. What can we do for you?
Well, John, I'm a. I found Head On Radio Network through my iPhone, and I've been listening ever since. And it's been a while. And I called you earlier in the week to thank you for filling in for Bob. You're doing a good job.
Thanks, man.
You're welcome. And I just would. My next door neighbor is from upstate New York, and he said he went up there. It was either I think he said Ithaca area. He said, but there are signs all over up there opposing the fracking. I called earlier about Wiener and actually the connection to the fracking, and I got on the Internet after I spoke with you because I just went with my intuitions, and then I got on the Internet and substantiated my intuitions, and it shows that there has been a moratorium been put in place, but they did want to lift the moratorium and get back into it. Of course, you've got the Sundance Film Channel and Robert Redford, a long-time known environmentalist, and his connection with the movie, the prison movie, and Mark Ruffalo, the actor who's from New York, and how they're making some headway with the fracking. So I think Wiener gets in the way of the natural gas people, and so he's taken out. Now, I agree with you, John, that he left himself vulnerable, and I'm not defending that, but I agree with you also that if you're going to be in that business, it's like war, it's combat. You have to have your flak jacket on all the time. You're stepping into an arena. I'm also an 11-year veteran of the Marine Corps. I guarded U.S. embassies, and you kind of have to watch your step. We have a clearance to do those types of jobs, and you have to watch what you do because any move you may make could lead to international attention.
Yeah.
You can have an international incident quite easily. They have the ability to hush them up. And actually, I'm familiar with a few stories that transpired in Central and South America concerning Americans, not in a negative way that would be considered of interest to some people. But it's the stories are over 20 years old, not to bore you. But I just, John, I wanted to say something not just because of my age of 53, but these are some of the things I've witnessed. I'll just make it quick because I know you've only got a few minutes, and we probably have more to learn from you. And I wanted to thank the last caller with the hip-hop connection and explanation because he shores it up from the younger folks, and I might shore it up from the middle-aged folks. But, you know, I'm old enough to have shook John Kennedy's hand. I shook his hand in front of Abraham Lincoln's tomb when I was 4 and a half. John F. Kennedy is dragging his feet on Vietnam. And remember, Kellogg Brown and Root, for all the patriotic right-wingers, Kellogg Brown and Root, which a lot of Americans might call Halliburton, whose corporate headquarters is now in the United Arab Emirates, so it doesn't pay taxes to its glorious patriotic nation, was in Vietnam. Vietnam had oil. And then Martin Luther King starts getting a lot of people listening to him, like, by the millions. Martin Luther King says, he talked about the original terrorists and the original terrorism, and a lot of white folks were listening to Martin Luther King. And he also, after he spoke out against Vietnam, the clock was ticking for Martin Luther King. And Bobby Kennedy, from what I'm understanding now, investigation of his brother's death, which I have not read the books. There's a couple things out about him taking his investigation down through Mexico City. So Bobby Kennedy is killed. Then along comes a guy named President Jimmy Carter, which most Americans don't realize. He went to college at the United States Naval Academy, probably one of the most difficult schools to get into, and then definitely a little tougher to get out of. But he happened to get a degree in the I think nuclear physics, and then works with Rickover, developing the nuclear fleet and Navy, not from necessarily a weapons standpoint, but for propulsion. And then if you look at Carter's economy, it's destroyed by high interest rates and manipulation of oil prices, and who would be in a better position to manipulate those connections other than the Bush family's connection to the Saudi royal family?
Of course.
And along comes a guy named President Clinton, who stood opposed to Vietnam then and still stands opposed to Vietnam, and I actually kind of owe my life to President Clinton and Hillary Clinton for saving my life, my daughter's life, my granddaughter's life, having been an active duty Marine in that time frame. And so I thank the Clintons, and I thank the Carters, and I thank the Kennedys, but they're all killed. Now, if you take a look, John, you've got what comes next is a U.S. senator. As the U.S. senator, if you remember, in the time frame in the late 90s, early 2000s, the Senate hung in the balance, and whoever controlled the Senate had a lot of stroke at that time, just like they would tomorrow. And I agree with Bob Kincaid. That may be what they're focusing on.
Yeah.
And letting the presidency go at this time. But Mel Carnahan, U.S. Senator from the St. Louis area, a very blue city in a red state, a very pro-labor senator, dies in a plane crash.
Yeah.
So they regain control of the Senate right after his wife leaves office after assuming his position for 8 or 9 months. U.S. Senator Paul Wellstone stands opposed to the war in Iraq. I happened to be home at that time watching him tear open the door of the Senate and fix his tie. You know, an ex-wrestler, wrestling coach, he dies, plane crash. Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy, not real big fans of Homeland Security. They get the weaponized anthrax. Anthrax is weaponized to such a small measurement, John, that nobody in the world has that technology other than us. So when you open the envelope, it floats out, nothing holding it in place. What
a coincidence. And those stories disappeared from the news rather quickly when people started asking those very questions. I do remember that really clearly.
It fell right off the table, and actually CNN started focusing on, and understandably so, but CNN focused on the postal workers, which was accurate. I mean, those are just as important Americans. But you're right. I mean, no one really. Where did that story go? And then you have the Dangle agent, who actually has some U.S. Special Forces background. He did some work in Africa, and they're looking at his U-Haul facilities across the country, and then he gets this high-speed lawyer out of Washington. I don't know if he was the Dangle, the disinformation agent, just a lot of – I really don't know that stuff, but I just don't know. And I agree with you, John. It did just fall by the wayside. Whatever happened to the anthrax letters? And then you go to – and
if you go back to that time, you know, it was such, there was such this amping up of this fear campaign, you know, we can't have the smoking gun be a mushroom cloud, and you know, 8 minutes, you know, it would take for Saddam to launch missiles at the UK, and in all, the, I mean, it, always in hindsight you can see these things, but it's the same thing over and over. In the chaos, in this beat up and the war drum thing, you know, people start going, wait a minute, that doesn't sound quite right. Oh, we'll just put that aside and turn up the volume on the things that seem to be gaining traction, you know, and when you get people into groupthink, and the media gets got into groupthink in the lead up to the Iraq war big time, you know, and many of them realize how being just, you know, stenographers was not fulfilling their job description one iota. But I was living here during that, the whole beat up, the whole arc up to the war. I remember trying to talk to some of my family back home. This is before this network existed, any of that. And just the media bubble thing. And I'd just be saying, hey, you know, as y'all are getting, you know, getting all gung-ho and everything, have you seen this? Have you seen this? I'm just afraid you're not seeing some of the media that we're seeing. And when all of a sudden you get people are already in such a fervor, you start bringing the stuff in. And I got responses of, that's just the Europeans. You don't know what it's like, and you don't understand. And all I'm, you know, all I was saying was, you know, while you're watching Fox 24/7, you know, I've been reading The Guardian, and even down here in our major media here, because, you know, Johnny Howard was all like, I'm right with you, I'm right with you, Bushy.
He had to run down there and thank Howard after that.
The people were not. I was part of the 2 million people that marched on the day against the war. And, you know, in a country of just over 20 million people, if you have 2 million of them out in their city streets.
That's huge.
That is massive. But yet.
John, they didn't show that. They didn't show that in America.
I know they didn't. I know they didn't. And I remember it distinctly.
Yeah. John, they didn't show the protests in New York City on the only channel that showed the protests in New York City was C-SPAN, and I watched all 3 hours of it, and I studied the crowd, in a sweet way, being a sympathetic protester who I also protested for the right wing NASA or NSA listeners. You're listening to an actual veteran who's for peace. Who protested that? Who's still strong enough to defend himself? So, bring on your COINTELPRO for me. But I wanted to close out the list, John, and I thank you as a veteran, as a fellow citizen for peace, as a person who thought when he at age 18 in 1977 was putting on a uniform to defend people like yourself and people like Bob Kincaid, people that love and care about society, and now they deregulate Wall Street and take it out of the asses of school teachers and firemen. I wanted to close the list out with left off with Elliot Spitzer, and then of course Alan Grayson speaks out against not only the war in Iraq and also the shitty equipment they sent them over there with, and is featured in Rolling Stones, gets elected here. I actually met Grayson. They were threatening Grayson's life here in Central Florida on the radio stronger language than innuendo. It was revolting. And I went to a veterans thing, John, at a Memorial Day thing. And I saw Grayson was going to be there. So I went down there with a day off and went up and shook his hand and let him know that while I was there, nothing would happen to him, but that they were saying severe things. He's a pretty good sized guy. I'm actually a bit of a fighter. Grayson's an educated man. I'm clear spoken, but I can also knock the shit out of somebody. And then I close out the list with Wiener, who goes up against fracking. Can I just say this? I want to hang up and get your opinion, John.
10 seconds.
What I'm reading about, okay, Libya, most of the oil goes to Italy. Who's buying Chrysler, John, Italy? So it's kind of a counter bailout. But it's also anti-Pan-Africanism. I'll hang up, John.
All right, take it easy, man. Thanks. Thanks very much, man. Oh, boy, how do you wrap that up in 60 seconds? Libya? Way too big a question, man. Like I said, the UK gets like a sizable portion of their oil from Libya. So I think it really affects them huge. So hence why I think that the ball was sent over there. So with all that, I'm gonna head off. Thanks to Lottie. Thanks to Susan. Thanks to Gene. Thanks to Texas Betsy. And I'm very sorry about your change in employment. That sucks majorly. And everybody else who does everything that they do, thanks to Ben Birch. Thanks to everybody at Coal River Mountain Watch for helping us out the way you do and helping Bob out to be on the road, plugging stuff for all of us. And Rick Smith is coming up next. Thanks for everything this week, folks. Be good. We'll catch you soon.